Hello, listeners. GM Nathan here before the episode for a quick announcement. We are taking a summer break. This episode will serve as the end of this arc, then we'll drop our monthly Reckless Talk next week as per usual. Then we won't be putting out any new episodes in July other than a special episode of our usually Patreon-only show, Reckless a Snack, which goes in the main feed on July 2nd. We will return with our July Reckless Talk on the 30th before A Tale Till Now and a new episode the week after. Now, a bit of background. Everyone makes jokes about scheduling being the true villain of regular TTRPG games, but we've always been pretty lucky over the 3 years of podcasting. Unfortunately, that caught up to us in 2024 because of a combination of a few things. First, we've recently been trying to focus on quality more than quantity during our recordings, which for us means doing more single, very good episode recordings on a weeknight instead of pressing to play late into the evening to get to. Second, life happens. Just in the last few weeks, we've had a lot of last-minute summer trips and family obligations, some mental health days, a COVID infection, which is still happening and real, so be safe and get boosted. And all of that was on top of a year of a lot of job and life changes across the podcast. So, to sum it up, no episodes in July except for in a snack and a late month to talk so we can get more recordings under our belt again. We appreciate you and your passion for our show and your patience. Anyway, that's all from us, and now, on to the episode. All the furniture in the conference room has been removed or pushed to the side. There is a good amount of activity around the guild hall this evening because you all are soon to be host to a renowned guest, shall we say. Punched in the middle of this conference room is the frame of a large minotaur man, Granak, who has been painstakingly tracing all kinds of arcane symbols and runes all around this room. Eventually, he stands up, dusts his hands off from the chalk that he's been using to trace all of the intricate lines that now cover the surfaces of this entire room. He wipes a little sweat off his brow. He shakes his head in disbelief a little and calls out, "All right, Golden Tree, I think it's done."
Cashgren looks around to where he is standing in like this chalk circle, which is the only place he could have stood for the last hour while Granak was drawing this.
Yep, you got painted, mopped into a corner.
Yeah, and like the rest of the guild has their own individual corners, and we're just like looking around, waiting for Granak to finish.
Self will, as he's standing there stoically, just,
"Granak, are you sure that, when we were ejected from there before, it was somewhat forcibly, is there... You sure there's enough room in here for her to come through and not get slammed into something?"
And also, we still are going to need to use this room afterwards. Like, this still needs to be here.
Yeah. No, I understand that. Technically, only part of this is to summon, and the rest is to keep it in. You understand? Like, keep the whole situation here and nowhere else, which is... why I would like to just remind you all that I will not be in the room. I will be outside of the contained area where the person's going to be. So, over in that corner are the summoning items. The books are in the other corner. I would suggest not touching those. But yeah, it's getting pretty late, so I think I'm
gonna
go.
I got it. Go ahead, Granik. I got this.
Yeah, okay.
Val will place the Libra Morte back on the pile and then move to place all of these summoning objects in the appropriate circle. And then after she does that, quickly move to her corner of the room.
You put these items down and you wait until huge energy spike. All the lines written all throughout the room all are supercharged. And in the middle of the room, in the middle of these assembled objects, there is a lone circle that glows bright. Starting from the tip of her very wide-brimmed hat that strains to get through the circle, all the way down to her fancy shoes, appears Lorana Moonglove. As she rises up from the ground, you see familiar features, eyes that are black, aside from yellow irises, long, flowing, beautiful robes, reminiscent of the night sky, and a small smirk showing just a hint of one of her two fanged teeth. She looks around without moving anything but her eyes, seeing the room that she is in, seeing you all, and says, "Oh, hello again, my friends. It is so, so good to see you again." And that is actually where we are going to jump forward in time. That's right, as a non-linear episode, everyone.
I thought you were going to say roll initiative.
Yeah, for sure.
I was like, that's an episode? Okay. Yeah.
Hard. We're going hard. Efficient storytelling. That's what we're about. No, we're jumping ahead a little bit to the twin event happening the next day, in fact, if our listeners will bear with us as I go on flights of fancy with narrative structure. Because the next day is the funeral for the Fortunate, the undead centurion, protector of the city, protector of you all on your adventures, member of the Bones, and formerly member of the Lasting Legion, the Pentarchy's undead shock troopers. It is also night. It is the next night. And you all have been summoned to the headquarters of the Bones, which you may all remember is a now run-down plantation-style work mansion on the outside parts of the city. As you approach this plantation, you feel the familiar sense of dread and discomfort. But at least there is that little bit of familiarity for you all, because this was the feeling that you all felt as you were out on the road with the Fortunate. Outside of this estate, you were all beckoned in by two members of the Bones, who you probably do not recognize. And as you enter underneath this kind of sooty doorway, you see an empty manor. Aside from another member of the Bones, who motions you to the back of the manor. You all don't really know what the evening holds in store for you all. You were just told to come here, and you were told to arrive with something meaningful to you, something that you would be interested in wagering. Now, before we talk about where it is that you are being gestured to go to, what is everyone bringing? And who are you? And who's your characters? And blah, blah, blah. whatever you feel is important to share, and how they're feeling as they approach this day.
Val is played by me. Hi, Sophie. She is a cleric of the Arcana Domain, human astric variety. I think there's a weight lifted off Val as she comes to this ceremony. But then as she arrives and remembers the loss of a friend, a new weight settles on her. And it feels all the heavier because of the effect the bones have on living creatures, that discomfort. And it feels familiar, but I think for her that makes it even sadder. She is glad that she's here with her guildmates, her friends, but it is a hard event to come to nonetheless. As for her item to wager, she thought about the few possessions she brought with her from Rachma and decided to bring a very nice quill that her brother gifted her. She decided on that because it was a very thoughtful gift from him, but he would also be very excited to hear a story that she wagered that quill at such a rare event.
Kathgrin, the dwarven warlock, approaches the barracks of the bones in his finest. And he approaches the building with mixed emotions. He has primarily pride in his heart because he knows that the fortunate died a soldier's death, a hero's death, saving their companions from the same fate. Because of them, we were able to find the solution to save the rest of the bones. And because of their sacrifice, we made it home alive to make sure that others would be safe. With that, of course, comes the loss. And there is no easy way to lose a comrade but to remember their stories, remember who they were, and to share that with others. And so Kathgrin, for his wager, brings a small notebook with him. He has spent time writing all of his favorite stories that he collected while he was at Lotros. All the ones that other soldiers told him, the ones that the traveling monks told him. These are the stories that inspired him to go on an adventure. And these are the stories he hopes to share.
So today I'm playing Checkers, the Grung Druid. And only Checkers, because Mango and Junior were far too spooked to come out to where the Bones headquarters is. Like Kathgrin, Checkers is kind of feeling two different emotions right now. One is trying to embody the seriousness of the situation. He knows that he is at a funeral. He knows that this is something that he should feel honored to have been invited to. And he wants to make sure that he is presenting himself appropriately. However, he also knows that this is a funeral for the fortunate. And in his time spent with them, he didn't really think that the fortunate was a particularly serious individual.
You know what? I think that's a reasonable conclusion.
Yeah. And he also doesn't think that the fortunate would really want today to be a day of dourness, of solemnity. And, you know, part of what we were asked to bring was something to wager. So part of him wants to be happy. Part of him wants to be playful, to really embody the spirit that the Fortunate left behind. What he has brought to the Fortunate's funeral is something that has quite a bit of sentimental value to him. It is a memento of the Day of Remembrance festival that the four of us underwent. It is his collection of pogs.
Yep. As soon as he said it, it was like, I know 10,000% what it is.
Checkers has, over the few months that he's been here in Agmar, managed to collect a full set of Day of Remembrance pogs.
Yes. Kind of like, remember when they would collect like state quarters?
Yeah, exactly. Have the exactly.
Fold out whatever kind of things. Yeah.
Catherine looks wide-eyed at you as you pull that out.
Yeah.
Wait
a minute.
It's a gold-foiled commemorative one? Oh my God.
I've been searching for weeks for that one. And he pulls out his own only half-completed pod collection.
This is why Checkers is in jail. He's
so yeah, right.
Wait a minute, my pogs are missing.
Well, Cashgren, maybe if you win the wager, you can find yourself with a complete collection of Day of Remembrance pogs. Wow.
So Selv makes his way to the barracks of the bones, and cupped in his hand is something that looks like to be wrapped in some kind of a red and gold cloth. But when he gets inside, he takes his hands apart, and inside is a stone. It looks like it's been polished, and it's been painted on it with some of the symbols of his monastery. And it's just kind of a little memento.
Yeah.
And once he gets inside, he just makes sure that it's nice and wrapped up and is ready to take that wherever, to whatever wager needs to be made.
Following behind you guys also are Etrus and Berga, who both have their own individual items that they have cupped in their hands or pockets or laps that we will reveal at a later time. As you all come inside and go deep into the manor house, the member of the bones standing in front of you bids you welcome and says, I'm sorry, but with your consent, where I am taking you is a place of secrecy. If I may, I have blindfolds that I would like to put upon you all.
Catherine says, I understand, of course.
Val just nods because, like, if she's trusting anyone to blindfold her, take her somewhere, it's the bones. Like, what? Yeah.
Thank you. First, please follow me. We've learned to go down the stairs first. It seems to make things easier for mortals. And a door swings open into a totally black staircase. For those of you who don't have dark vision,
aha, suckers,
you get the impression that a blindfold isn't going to add too much because it is that dark. There is a railing, and you're able to kind of feel your way down.
Ah, yes, built a code.
And every once in a while, there'll be a lit candle. You go down what must be multiple flights of stairs, but there's no winding back and forth. It is just down. Eventually, you come to the end of this long walk, and this very narrow walkway opens up slightly. As the member of the bones turns back, ensures that none of the mortals have somehow gotten lost in these last few minutes, and holds up blindfolds for you all, the last thing that you guys see before there is no more light and before you put your blindfolds on are a sort of familiar sight, I suppose, to your Golden Tree eyes, because you, just a few feet away, start to see row after row of dug out, humanoid-sized, holes in the wall, which you all would know are the signs of a catacomb. I don't know if any of you knew that there were catacombs underneath the Red City.
I am choosing to believe that Val did not, and this was that good of a kept secret. What am I trying to say? Yeah, that secret.
That secret.
That secret.
And let's jump back in time in this moment as the almost predatory gaze of Lorana Moonglove circles the room, takes you all in, takes in the room, and she starts kind of walking around a little bit and just examining things. Examining you all.
Kaskrin, upon seeing Lorana, says, "Thank you for meeting us. I wasn't honestly sure if the summoning would work. Well, we have your books."
Oh my gosh. It is so weird to be back here. Not like here, your hall. I saw the looks. Not like in your guild hall. I assume that's where we are, right? Is that where this is?
No.
No, but like in the city. In Agmar. I did not think I was going to be back here, boy, for a while. This is weird. Do you guys still have that one, like, sandwich stall? I don't remember the name, but it's, like, over on the main street. I just got this weird craving being back here, and it just, you know.
I, Sophie, am trying to remember any sandwich shops we have named.
I mean, right, I mean, probably not.
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't seen a sandwich shop, but if you, I guess, want a sandwich, we can get you one.
Lorana appears right next to you, Kaskrin.
Ah.
Oh, Cass, that's so sweet of you. Would you leave and go get me a sandwich?
Before you answer that, did Granik say anything about breaking any kind of circle if us leaving would do that? Or, you know, do we
no,
have to stay in there?
No, you don't.
Okay.
Before Cass can answer, Val will interject and say, "We can send someone to get you whatever food you require."
No, I think I'd like Kaskrin to go get it for me. He would love to, right, Kaskrin? Get me a sandwich?
Val just mindlessly be like, "Don't do it."
Before Cass can answer, Kaskrin looks at Lorana and says, "Well, I mean, I could, but I think me being here is important. You know, I should really stay, but that doesn't mean we can't get you what you need."
"I'm sorry, Kaskrin. I didn't mean to make you feel unimportant. No, you can stay. Of course. How have you guys been? What's new in your travels? It's been a couple weeks. You know, you adventuring types. There's always, you know, crazy revelations and, oh, mysterious artifact. So what have you guys been up to?"
"Well, the restricted section's quite a wild ride now.
Really?
Proposed love to a sentient book."
Then her eyes kind of dart over to the pile of books mm-hmm. that are over there, and she's like, "It's a good read. I understand."
Mm-hmm. "I wrote down my love speech because I feel like you'd want it to know. It's tucked as a bookmark."
I desperately want to know. Yes, thank you for your instincts, Val.
Checkers takes the opportunity to kind of launch into his retelling of the restricted section.
With his drawings?
"Yes. Yeah, the library was great. Do you know this guy named Trip Steves?"
"No."
"Yeah, we met Trip Steves in the library. He was terrible, but really good travel agent."
Checkers, and again, she appears like right next, like she's like laying down next to you, just kind of an elbow propped up with her hand under her chin. She's like, "Checkers, last time I saw you, you were wearing a wonderful hat."
"Thank you."
I'm a little disappointed, you know? I mean, I thought we had this interest in common.
"Actually, the hat helped me out a lot. When we went down to get the Liber Morte, I pulled out the hat, and I really impressed the socks out of him."
"Really?"
"Yeah."
"Well, I am so glad that you've made such a good imprint, shall we say, on my future book." She's just looking around the room. She kind of squints. Garnak around?
No, he's not around. He left the city, actually.
He died.
He died.
Do not say that.
This really looks a lot like his spell work.
Yes, Granick did draw the circles for us, as he's the one who knows how. But then he met up with some other friends
to attend to.
Some friends?
Yes.
He's meeting with friends.
A male dwarf friend who's happily married.
Sounds complicated. But, you know, he liked things messy. So, what happened to Crossroads?
Excellent question.
I'm surprised, actually, given that you knew about the attacks here, but didn't know what had happened at Crossroads.
I don't get out much.
Where do you get your news from?
Guilders, mostly. You know, we pick up people every once in a while, and so we try to plumb them for as much information as possible. But thanks to you all, and thanks to some of my new library additions, I'll be a little bit better informed, I think, moving forward.
Selv will turn to Lurana and brace himself for the sudden appearance of her right up in his face.
Before you turn, she's already there.
We did find out a little bit more about the attacks on Crossroads. Specifically, some part of the architecture was taken of the bridge. A cornerstone or a capstone or something like that. Do you happen to know what significance those have?
Oh my god, how long have we been here already? I'm so sorry I've been talking your ears off. Actually, one of my clones is driving the buffalo right now. I think it's Ophelia, and that's going to be a disaster. So anyway, where are my books?
Can I make an insight check to see if that was a deflection?
Of course.
That was 100% a deflection.
Yes. 7?
I'm sure very charismatic, centuries-old liar will definitely not meet the threshold of 7.
23.
So you, Sophie, and I assume Val, went in being like, that seems like a deflection.
Yeah.
Was that a roll just to confirm that that was the case?
I was rolling to see if she is deflecting because I suspect her of orchestrating this attack and getting the Crossroads things. And Lorana's up to some shady shit.
Absolutely. You're trying to read this moment of shifting, and it occurs to you that this is a very obvious feint by Lorana. But from what you know about Lorana, if she did it, she wouldn't be so obvious in getting around it. You know, where it's like, that almost seems like the wrong kind of move if it was her who organized it, if that makes sense.
It does. I feel like if she was the one who pulled it off, she might leave breadcrumbs. Right. Because she would want somebody to realize how smart and how powerful she is.
100%. Or she would just lie. You know, she would just lie and say something else. For her to just hard pivot is like, it is very much like Lorana, but also not necessarily like the strategic play that she might make.
Val, in response, will be like, that is a shame you don't know more about those artifacts. I was going to offer you a detailed account of the events of Rixia for the past decade that I have here in this notebook. Because I figured you being this all-powerful sorceress, would know about these powerful objects of Crossroads.
Lorana appears in front of you, and she says, oh, wanting to make a deal within a deal. Very interesting, young cleric. Let's talk.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by A Foul Light Shines, a new free serial novel based on a D&D campaign. The Empire of Fire and Water has known 20 golden years of peace since the end of Aegenion's War, a peace which is now in peril. When a ragtag group of friends intervene in a grotesque monster attack, they're too late to save a wounded man who leaves them with an encrypted journal and the words, "Trust no one, Tyr." Can the gang find Tyr, escape the claws of more strange monsters, and uncover the lurking threat to the Empire before it's too late? This story features themes of found family and strength in diversity, and is available for free on Campfire and Royal Road. A foul light shines. Come for the fantasy. Stay for the cheese-obsessed goblin gunslinger. Dark Dice is a critically acclaimed actual play podcast brought to you by Fool and Scholar Productions. With over 20 awards in sound design, Dark Dice brings its horror-themed campaigns to life with snappy combats, terrifying monsters, and tons of original music. Each episode is only 45 minutes long and features an all-star cast of seasoned role players and first-time players alike, including folks you might recognize, like Jeff Goldblum, Lily Pichu, and Jasper William Cartwright. Start with Season 1 and follow the adventurers on their quest to investigate a doppelganger, or jump into Season 2 and listen to a new story about a terrible, corrupting sound that infects all who hear it. Dark Dice is available for free however you listen to podcasts or at darkdice.com. So ask yourself, do you seek him? But that is where we're going to cut forward in time once more. You all have been traipsing through the catacombs, and you've been walking and doing lots of twists and turns for a bit now.
I would like to try to figure out kind of where we are within the city and kind of where we've been. I don't know if that would be survival.
Yes. Or... anyone who wants to figure out where they are could roll in a survival check, like just kind of generally.
I do not, out of principle, because the bones have asked us to keep their secret.
Totally.
And I will not try to figure it out.
But I see a couple other people.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know. I'm thinking of it as like, Selv is almost unconsciously doing it. Like,
what's your passive? What was your passive survival be?
16.
That's pretty good. Would you like to use a passive or would you like to do a roll?
I'll do a roll.
Please.
Checkers is actively thinking about this. He's like, you know what? I do want to know.
Yep.
And Checkers has been over quite a bit of the city.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a true.
And with his shenanigans.
With my urchin ability, I can get around the city twice as fast.
Actually, roll with advantage.
Ha.
This is like Checkers' thing, like being able, and you know, some of it's familiarity, certainly, but also there's just a degree of like, I walked kind of this far, I made this turn, I went here, there's maybe an intersection it sounded like.
He knows zero street names,
right.
But he knows where he is all the time.
Oh, constantly, absolutely.
I'm sorry, I'm just imagining Checkers trying to find a formal address in it.
Yeah.
Could not do it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, no idea. Unfortunately, it's a bit too disorienting. I only got a 13.
Yes. So what both of you actually would still know, though, is that you've doubled back underneath the city. Like, you may have gone underneath the walls, like the main walls of the city. And you're not sure how deep you are yet, but you're maybe not even in the outskirts of the inner city. You might be pushing closer and closer to the main stretch of the city, closer to the Ruby Citadel, closer to the Waveless Lake, deep back into the city. So you guys have been walking for a ways. When you hear a familiar voice, "Ho, Guilders, welcome," as the voice of the pious, the other member of the Bones, calls out, and you are all instructed to remove your blindfolds.
The Pious, it's good to see you again. It's been quite a while.
This member of the Bones, who again is semi-indistinguishable, wearing the exact same armor, has the same arm covering that you know covers up the symbol of the Pentarchy that's kind of embossed on their armor, and is otherwise kind of unremarkable, and yet at the same time, you know them exactly mm-hmm. every time you see them, is sitting there and is still sitting extremely still and still is wrapped in the magical net that you guys found him sitting in originally.
And Kashkin will ask the pious, are we the last to arrive? I know it took us some time to get here.
I believe so. Please, there are already seats prepared. As he gestures kind of to this room, you look around and you see that it is an even larger catacomb. It is surprisingly unadorned, but in amongst a few of the alcoves, you see helmets. Helmets of the bones. And there's only a handful. There are spots for dozens, scores even. All around this room, in rows, facing forward, are members of the bones, all standing perfectly still in their kind of uncanny, unnatural way of standing still. And inside, there are a smattering of other people, actually, but it's certainly a minority of mortals. Most notably, aside from yourselves, you would see Vina Calvetta and you would see Namgar, the two members of the town guard. And there are seats exclusively for the mortal in the mortal section, essentially. Vina and Namgar are both standing, but there are seats technically there for you, while there is no seating for any member of the bones in this place.
We call that the heartbeat section.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas if you have one, that's where you go.
And so, yes, you guys are kind of gestured to your seats. And again, there are actually a few other people, maybe some people that you may, that Kaskrin might recognize. There's actually one or two members of the council who are down here, kind of the ruling council that you guys haven't really interacted with all that much. But Kaskrin, you've done dossiers and reports mm-hmm. on all of these. You guys would have all seen this kind of information. So you would recognize a few of them. And yeah, you see a couple other mortals. Actually, you would see Alareth would be down here. The PI tree guy is actually looking rough down.
This would be like way worse for him.
This is exactly. So Alareth is the only mortal who is sitting in their chair at this juncture. And you can tell it's not out of disrespect. It is. He's like trembling a little bit.
He like physically can't stand.
Yes.
Because he's a mortal living plant.
Yes.
And as I remember you describing the plantation, all plant life around the plantation has died.
Yes, is dead. It is a blackened crater, essentially, in the nearby area. I maybe undersold this, too. If you guys, I don't think, you have maybe, when you guys came in to see the untethered and talk to the shield that first time, saw most of the bones, which is something most people don't see. Because most of the time they're out. They're out patrolling. They certainly take their breaks and take their time and have leisure time. But you get the impression that everyone is here. Mm-hmm. The most amount of bones that have ever been in a room, as far as you guys know, are here. And they are all lined up with precision. And there is an eerie military formation vibe. Even if there's just kind of a weird sense memory of it, even if it is the furthest thing from a military presentation, there's a vibe.
Kaskrin is going to take notice of this kind of procession of the bones. And he's also taking note of if any of them have different stylized or cracks in their armor, or if they're all identical.
I love that you're... that both you, David, and Kaskrin are thinking about that, because to a casual viewer, it is perfect, unerring precision. Some of them are a little taller, a little shorter, but yeah, as you look more and more, even if you don't know who they are or know their personalities or whatever, you definitely start to notice those little things where you notice that the fortunate would kind of stand a little slightly jaunty at attention mm-hmm. and that the shield would kind of weirdly push his chest out even further. That to a casual observer, nothing. They are a wall of uniform destruction But here in this place, in this setting, to someone who is taking the time to pay attention and notice and care about it, these are a collection of individuals.
Castrin's going to pay his respects to Vina and Namgar, walk past the city council and give them a respectful nod, and then will make his way to his chair, where he's going to probably sit next to Alareth and kind of just take in the atmosphere.
Everyone, yeah, kind of exchanges those kind of like small pleasantries.
I feel like it's when you arrive to church, to mass or service, it's like kind of file in. We like, as a guild, we all kind of follow Cass and like pay our respects to everyone. And then we go
for sure,
find our seats
for sure. Alareth next to you, Kaskrin, PI tree guy, AKA man who is a tree, for those listeners who do not remember, does he canonically have a hat? I can't remember.
I have always pictured him with a fedora. He's
a
PI,
right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I just couldn't remember if canonically I said that.
Absolutely a trench coat.
Yeah, that's, I think. I thought we had clothed him, but for some reason my brain kept vacillating in terms of how much clothing
he was
wearing.
I am picturing the tree end from Lord of the Rings in a fedora and a trench coat.
I think that is canonically the case, other than just human size.
Yeah.
But when you sit next to him, Kaskrin, he kind of runs his finger along the brim of his fedora, just giving you a little kind of nod, and just looks like he might, whatever the tree equivalent of vomit is, but just sits there and kind of purses his barky lips.
Yeah, like...
Eventually, someone moves the pious up to the front. And he, in a clear voice, says, "First, we in the Bones thank you all for being here. We are in this place out of respect for our duty and the closeness we have forged through creation, service, and time. But that so many choose to be here of their own wills is a testament to the city. This is a ceremony we created for ourselves that speaks to the souls of us who were created. But we gladly share it with those who would honor our progress. And now we begin." Our creation was a narrowed one. Our purpose limited. No identity but servant. No service but violence. But we have grown beyond that. We have forged our own identities with one another, with ourselves, and with our gods. Today, we celebrate the identity of the fortunate. For us, no tears are shed, because ours is a life where all changes are hard won. Death is for us a rare chance to shed all that we do not care to carry and see who remains. Today, we celebrate their chosen and earned namesake, and later hope that they may make themselves anew in what lies beyond. And now we're going to go back. We're going to jump back forward in time. Or no, excuse me. We're going to jump backwards in time. I've already fucked it up in my brain. I was so clear. Lorana looks at you, Val, and she says, "How detailed are we talking about this history of the area? And do you mean of the area? Do you mean of the world? I mean, we need to be specific here."
"Oh, I said of Rixia. You'll know I'm of the illustrious Athium, and we are nothing if not thorough."
"That is unfortunately true. You all are real sticklers."
"Here's a sample page because I figured you'd want an insight into this notebook.
Very coolly reaches over, but really yanks the page out of your hand. And she looks at you, looks down at the page, and skims it and skims it, and her eyes widen a little bit. And she looks up and sees that you all are watching her have this reaction and looks down. Very cool. What's the thing that Lorana is very interested to read?
Ooh. I think the summary, the little taster information that Lorana got was, because this is covering a decade, so she got the first 5 years of, like, the Rixian vegetable competition. Yeah. like the, specifically highlighting peppers.
Ooh, just very casually, yeah. Got it.
Uh-huh. Well, for popper reasons.
Yeah, of course, naturally.
Have left out the most recent years because I know.
Right. This is essentially it's 1982 to 1991 of pepper growing competition.
Yeah.
Right.
And her eyes just get bigger and bigger. She sees how much farming technology has improved. Like, they can make them how big?
You can.
Oh how spicy?
Oh my God. There's so much cream cheese you can put into these things. I don't think our fryers are big enough to fry these. Are you willing to stake your reputation as a guilder and member of your little library nerd club that it's all this thorough?
Absolutely, yes.
No take backs.
No take backs. And I'm also a gifted naturalist, realist artist, and there are sketches.
Are any of these sketches of prominent warriors in that span? And before you answer, what state of undress would you say these sketches are? Academically speaking.
There is a pre and post battle of the carnage of their clothing.
Ooh. Okay, well... I'll think about it. Let me think about it. Mm-hmm. You guys are really distracting me here. You know, we're here for one thing, and it's nice been catching up, but, you know, we have a job to do, right? You know, I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, and we didn't mean to keep you without your sandwich, without Granek nearby, but we appreciate you coming here on such short notice anyway.
That means a lot coming from you, Kaskrin. I appreciate it. Thanks.
I feel uncomfortable.
All right, so books, gimme.
They're in a separate corner that none of us are in. Val will point to them. It's like they're right over there on the table for you.
Selv, could you fetch the books? I have to be here for the ritual. You wouldn't understand.
Is that bullshit?
Yeah, you don't know the magic she's about to do. It's hard to say. Who knows?
I'm insane.
It's a vibe check.
It's a vibe check.
This whole thing's a vibe check.
Whole thing's a vibe check.
It's probably
because she's going
statistically
too much back to business. Because if we learned anything from Lorana last time, it was she wants to chit chat.
She wants to chit chat, but also give me a roll. Give me a roll. Actually,
it's an 8.
she wants to think about it.
Okay.
So, yes, she's like, Self, could you be a doll and use those strong, spindly arms of yours to go grab those books for me?
I believe we are instructed not to touch them.
Oh my God, you guys are such nerds. And she just like literally walks over and grabs all the books. And she's like, ooh, okay. Hey, all 5. Look at you all. Good job. I'm not gonna say that I and the clones had a running bet going as to how many books that if you survived you would actually emerge with, but I'll say it wasn't 5. If this hypothetically happened, of course. But hey, you know what? A deal is a deal. She kind of moves back to the center of the room at that kind of main circle that she kind of entered from. And she puts she puts 4 of the books down at her feet. And in her hands is the Liber Morte. she starts kind of flipping through it, and she slows down, flips another couple pages, and furrows her brow a little bit, and then looks at Val, and then smiles a little bit, and all she says is, "Are you done with this?"
Val gives Arana a smirk and says, "For now."
All right. She looks down at the book and she mutters something under her breath, kind of waggles her fingers at it, and then flicks it really hard right in the spine. And she nods and then starts flipping again. She's like, all right. I knew that. Oh, and then that. Wow. Oh, God. Guys, I cannot tell you. She was so good. She was so good, guys. Man, if you guys had seen her at her peak, well, you would probably be subjugated into her armies. But man, you'd be pretty impressed, I bet.
And by her, do you mean, of course, the Dreamweaver?
Yes, yes. My master was... She was a genius, and that jerk didn't tell me half of what she knew. But this is nice. This helps.
And Castrin, again, knew that Lorana was related, but, like, at the mention of the Dreamweaver is Lorana's master, is like, ah, okay. All right.
Pieces coming together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Val is doing her best to stay cool and is mentally freaking the fuck out.
Right. Writing journal entries.
Yes. Yeah. It's just like the realization of like, what, who did we summon actually?
Yeah, right. And also, what have we done?
And she keeps flipping through until she lands on a section where she just puts her perfectly manicured fingernail onto a passage. She's like, aha, here we are. Do you guys have access to, say, a piece of armor from the Lasting Legion?
Yeah, I got the whole thing right here.
Oh, I don't need the whole thing. Just you know, kind of enough. Armor sucks to wear, if I'm being honest. One of the, what's the where it's on your kind of like forearm or like
gauntlet?
Your shin.
Vam braces?
I think they would only be a vam brace if I was wearing them. You get it? Guys, I am a vampire. Yes.
Castrin smudges one of the lines in the ritual. Banished forever.
You're very clever, yes.
And Checkers will pull out the piece of armor that she is requesting and like just kind of leave it in front of him because he's seen like how careful Sel's being and like he doesn't remember what Granax says. Not an idea.
Nope.
But he's reading the room right now. Mm-hmm.
She looks over, sees that you've put it down, and then suddenly you see her step from behind you as if she was just walking from behind you the entire time and just kind of picks it up and walks back to the middle of the room. And she's turning over this piece of armor, which again is like pretty hefty because the Fortunate was pretty hefty. And she's like, yeah, okay, yes, this still I think has the right resonance. And so if I do that, yeah, okay, I can do this. She puts it down at her feet and she says, man, this would have been so much harder if I wasn't in this city. You guys must have so much fun casting in this place because like she really did a number making this place. It is just chock full of magic. Mm-hmm. And so if you guys want to invite me back, I'd really appreciate it. I could do some really fun things here. Anyway, stand back a little and immediately, her irises turn from black with kind of gold irises to entirely gold. She starts reading off a section of the Liber Morte in a language that you guys cannot fully comprehend. But it is something weighty, and you guys feel an atmosphere change in the room. And the energy that is still kind of emanating faintly from those chalk lines, it starts to glow a little bit brighter and brighter, and she continues chanting, and suddenly it sounds like multiple voices are chanting with her, and that her voice is resonant, but also maybe there is someone or someone's else chanting with her. Val, you know the voice. At least one of, you can pick out one of the voices as the Libra Morte. And this energy starts to build and build. And again, it is like someone has started removing oxygen from this room. Not so much that you're not able to breathe, but that you can feel a difference. And then she takes the book, flips it upside down so that it is pages open, raises it over her head, and then slams it down onto the ground just on top of this piece of armor. Immediately, a huge expulsion of energy, and all the energy is gone from this room, and it becomes much darker suddenly. And then, as the energy builds up once again, very softly, you can see she raises the book, and you can see a simple hammer sitting there. She looks down at this smoking piece of metal, and she nods and looks up at you all and is like, there we have it. A job complete. This item can be used to repair, within reason, of course, any members of the Lasting Legion.
Kashkin is going to walk forward and take this hammer up and kind of like rotate it around and inspect it a bit before taking a step back towards the rest of the Golden Tree Guild. It says, well, thank you for your work, Lorana. I think this will do quite nicely, if it does what you say it will.
Oh, it will. It will. We skip forward in time once more. There have been a couple of additional kind of things said in the ceremony, and the pious looks around and asks you all to approach with that which you were asked to wager. Everyone in the room, including your fellow mortals, the members of the Bones who are there, all approach this central area kind of up front. You start to see all kinds of trinkets be put down, including, of course, your own. Vina puts down something, Namgar puts down something, the council members put down something. Berga puts down an old gauntlet that has the Golden Tree symbol kind of stamped on the back of the wrist. And Etrus puts down a vial that is simply marked don't. And they both put it down with equal weight and seriousness. The shield, the commander steps forward. Will the Bone Keeper approach?
And Checkers will get up from his seat and approach the altar, the currently empty altar. One by one, he will slowly take out the pieces of armor that he has been in charge of caretaking, the individual pieces of armor left behind by the Fortunate, and gently place them upon the altar in front of the rest of the Bones.
The ceremony, once again, stills somehow even impossibly more than the Bones already are still. The shield reaches behind this altar and brings out a clay pot of something. He uncorks it and then begins pouring it out over this set of armor. After a moment, you see embers start to form and fire starts to catch, alighting this suit of armor. And the shield steps backward as this fire starts to catch. And he says, we were created with a single purpose, to serve. We were found by others who gave us new purpose. Our service to others allowed us to find ourselves. Our service to others allowed us to become ourselves. Our service is our burden, now gladly lifted. And our sibling and comrade, the fortunate, may now put down their burden a final time. Their long patrol is over, and their journey begins. The pious chimes in, and he says, "This ceremony is about the old, but it is also about shedding the old, even if it is beloved. But the fortunate had a request for this final wager of theirs. To thank you for not just your willingness to play along, but for your trust. Before you are items precious, gathered by all those in attendance. Their final wish was that you find an item and take it. Then find whose it was. Learn about them. Perhaps use it as a bet again. The wager was always a thrill, they told me. The specter of failure became a friend even more than the joyful companionship of a win. But the connection of a wager was what was most important. We cut back once more to the guild hall, and Lorana and Val and the Golden Tree. Val, as Lorana kind of turns again her attention to you, you now see over her shoulder the specter of the Libra Morte. It is looking forward, seemingly not noticing you or anything else. But their arms are folded into their robes. Lorana says, "Well, guys, it's been really fun. As much as I would love to stay, like I said, first of all, Ophelia is driving and she's an idiot. I mean, once I got past kind of the like K's and L's, it really went downhill quality-wise, so I gotta get back. And, you know, I'm really now, since Cascarin didn't get me a sandwich, really craving the turkey bravo from Bell Peppers, so I'm gonna do that and enjoy a nice read. But yeah, keep me updated on how things go, right, guys?"
I mean, did you want a travel read? As Val holds up the notebook.
She glares at you. "Yes, give it to me. Just give it. Just give it. Give it. Give it. Give it. Give it. Give it.
I'll give it."
"Yeah, I know. Okay, fine. There was a bunch of stuff carved into it. There were protective runes, blah, blah, blah. It was like this whole thing. But really, at its core, this older kind of thing that existed was, well, let me put it this way. Just go look up the Key of Binding. And that'll tell you all the info. I don't really actually know all that much. I knew it was there, but like, that's it. Now give it."
Thank you, Lorana.
"Come on, come on." The light is starting to
light. We'll walk over and thank you for your help, Lorana. And secret note, as Lorana opens it, there's detailed information on how Lorana can get more information if Val gets information.
Ooh, okay.
You know what to call me.
Yeah, right. Secret pen pals.
Yeah.
Mm. And you guys, don't be strangers. This was great. Tell that man that I looked good and powerful.
Absolutely. We will paint him the truest picture because you do look good and powerful.
Flattery will get you places. And then she starts like descending slowly, like a very comically slow elevator. And she's like, well, all right, bye, guys. Don't forget to read the user manual for that hammer before you use it."
"What? Give it to us right now."
"I'm just kidding, you guys. Bye." And you see her hat like stays on top of the portal for a second before you see it kind of like concave in as she pulls it in after her. And then with a surge of energy, things close once more.
That was fun. I kind of like Lorana.
I don't know. She gives me the creeps.
She has a presence.
She has great style.
And we will once more jump forward in time. The ceremony has ended. You all have been re-blindfolded, and you eventually reemerge at the Manor of the Bones. The vibes are a little weird. No one's really sure what you do at the end of like an undead funeral. At least none of the mortals are. And there's also not a ton of, you know, kind of like, not tons of sentimentality.
As we make our way out of the stairwell that led down to the catacombs, Kaskrin takes off the blindfold and goes towards the shield. He takes out the forged hammer that Lorana provided us and holds it out in front of the shield. And it feels like there's a moment where the shield knows already what it is before Kaskrin says anything.
Mm-hmm.
Even still, Kaskrin says, "This is the hammer meant to help the untethered." And he hands it over.
He takes it and it looks comically small in his very large gauntleted hands. And he just regards it for a moment. I would imagine that other members of the Bones kind of notice. And they, much like the shield, might know already what this could be.
I kind of imagine it has a different aura,
yeah,
like an opposite aura of everything that's been happening here. It's like this little hammer has like a breath of fresh air around it somehow.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, absolutely. And again, you can feel it. The shield eventually looks back up at you guys and puts his arm across his chest in a salute and says, "With this, you deliver a future." And he just bows to you all. And very quickly, so do every single other member of the Bones. That is where we'll end this week's episode, everyone. And where we will end our Guilder's journey through the restricted section. Thank you for playing and for listening, and we will see you next week. Go give someone a hug today.
Yeah. We did it.
Yeah, the library was great. Do you know this guy named Trip Steves?
No.
Wait.
Oh, yeah. Do you know this guy named Rick Steves?
No,
wait,
no, no.
Rick Steves? You said Rick Steves earlier.
Trip Steves.
Trip
Steves is the travel guy. Lair E. Steves is the announcer.
Rick Steves is the actual
is the actual Rick human.
So you need to just say
This is too deep.
I feel like there are... Jonathan's going to cut a lot of this episode, and they're all going to make really good clips.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. Sure. Exactly.